Do not adjust your MP3 player. There is nothing wrong. We have taken control.
Omega oil is good for rheumatism, so they declare. And olive oil is good upon a salad, also on the hair. Though we know that castor oil always cures the pain, banana oil is something new. So just let me explain. When he tells you, I adore you, that's banana oil. And she answers, I'll die for you, that's banana oil. He says, when I buy the stone, what a handsome ring you'll own. But the only ring she gets is on the telephone.
You're the first boy ever kissed me.
That's banana oil. And I wonder if you miss me. More banana oil. He says I'll do right by Nell. Mother thinks that's simply swell. But Dad is wise and he knows right well. That's banana oil. Now standard oil is always advertising. We know that's so. They claim their oil is far more popular than any kind we know. But there is still another oil, seen to rank supreme. It's what we call banana oil. I'll tell you what I mean. When a girl says, I'm just 20, that's banana oil. And if money Dad has plenty, that's banana oil. I wonder what's become of maids used to wear their hair in braids when you took them dancing, ordered only lemonades.
Yes, my hair is naturally curly.
That's banana oil.
And I've got to be home early.
More banana oil. Who says girls hate new clothes to wear? Who says older men won't stare? And who says our moms don't bob their hair? That's banana oil.
Hello, this is Clyde J. Kale of Mystery Play Internet Radio, and welcome to this podcast. This series is what I call Banana Oil, just like the song states. We poke fun at life in general, politics, parody tunes, and some really old-time radio, silly adult theme shows.
Because I just love farming, more banana oil. Now here's one thing I'll tell you what. Big oil men I've met a lot, but the only oil those birds have got is just banana oil.
You're listening to a presentation brought to you by Mystery Play Internet Radio.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. Find freshly picked podcasts just for you at blueberry.com. That's blueberry, no E's, .com.
Disclaimer. The material and comments presented in this podcast
do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the producer and the provider. And about half the world. They are strictly for their own lessons and of their own minds.
I bought one of my own. Now I sit at home alone and hear them dish the dirt. But all that I can hear is...
Hello, replay listeners. It's Radio Dan here, and today it's November 14th, 2006, and we have approximately 35 seconds before we are going to be on the air. And this is a very exciting show for me, for intern Jessica, and I have a real good feeling about this because after a couple of failed attempts, we are finally going to have author, columnist, and horse racing prognosticator Jay Cronley on the air with us. And I couldn't be happier. He's the guy who wrote my favorite film of all time, Let It Ride. And that's coming up in about 15 minutes. And you know what? We have about 10 seconds to the start of the show, so I'm just going to go ahead and cue a few things, and we're going to get going. Let's see if Jessica will be able to introduce me in time. That's always a fun game.
CBS presents this program in color.
It's time for the Radio Dan Show with your host, Radio Dan. Oh my God.
Welcome one, welcome all. It is time for the Radio Dan Show. I am your host, Radio Dan. It is the Tuesday edition of the program. Today is November 14th. I'm sorry.
I can't find that paperwork.
Oh, you can't find that. Well, you know what? Don't worry about it. We'll
pull it up.
We will pull it up and take care of things. We have about 15 minutes anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, now, this is the program. If you are a first-time listener, what we do here is for about an hour, we're going to sit and chitty-chat about the wonder and glory of pop culture. We'll talk about movies, TV, books, radio, whatever.
Peanut butter and jelly.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, which Jessica is shoving
devouring.
In.
Devouring.
She is shoving in her big fat pie hole right this
so
very
good.
Second.
Milk.
Milk? We're going to talk about milk?
Peanut butter and jelly with milk.
Oh, okay. By the way, that's my sidekick there, the person always sitting to the left of me, intern Jessica. Say hello, intern Jessica. Now, tonight is an unusual show because we have an actual guest this evening.
Oh, we are so excited.
We have a guest. We have Mr. Jay Cronley coming on the air. He is an author, columnist, and a horse racing prognosticator, which is quite the trifecta of jobs, of occupations.
See,
that's a little joke.
Yeah, too bad you didn't have the rim shot.
Oh, yeah, I don't need that. All right, now, Jessica, you went ahead and you just spoke with Mr. Cronley a few minutes before we went on the air.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you tell me what that was like while I call a few things up?
Mr. Cronley.
Right.
I cannot wait to get him on this air. The airwaves. Okay? Because he's got a voice and a personality that is perfect for radio.
Is that right?
I'm not sure about the face. Maybe he's got a face for radio, too.
I've seen...
He'll tell us.
Well, you know, I've seen his picture in his columns.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't shove your mouth full of food when you're about to tell a story. That's generally not a good idea. So you're supposed to talk while I call things up. That's how it works. Like, Jessica... Jessica is all... She is, like, hyper. She's hyperly excited about this, aren't you?
I'm super excited.
Now, for those of you who don't know who Jay Cronley is, the books he's written have been turned into the films. Now, it's funny because he has three books that are turned into a films, and it was 3 years in a row.
He was on a hot streak.
He was on a hot streak for 3 years. Let's see, Funny Farm, Let It Ride, which the book was called Good Vibes, and Quick Change.
Yes. And you've got your, I mean, look at this cast. You've got, Funny Farm's got Chevy Chase.
Yes.
You've got, Let It Ride from Good Vibes. You've got, Richard Dreyfuss.
Yes.
Okay. And then, Quick Change, you've got Bill Murray.
Bill Murray, by the way, who happened to direct that film as well.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even, you know, and I can't wait to hear about his experiences, if any. If he had any, with actual, like, being on set and being called in about this or that, because, you know, he's very, he's an expert in racing in general, so they probably did go to him a lot for the whole,
You know what's so funny about it is that this guy has written about I'd say 10 books, right? He's got 10 novels under his belt. Only one of them happens to be about horse racing. So, you know, after reading Good Vibes and, you know, seeing the movie Let It Ride, I wouldn't have guessed that horse racing was, like, his occupation, you know? But, like, every year, like, on the Kentucky Derby, he's got columns about it every year. Like, recently with the Breeders' Cup, if you go to ESPN.com and you go to the horse racing section, you know, you can take a look at Jay and you can see, you know, you can read some of his columns. And even if you don't like horse racing, they're very funny. He's got a very humorous slant on everything.
What a guy. I think I did it through the Wikipedia.
Oh, is that right?
A better little, an easier way to look at his books.
Okay.
His.
See, now Jessica had printed up something, and it actually made it to the car.
It made it up here, too. I'm sure we'll find it after we're done.
But now she has misplaced it. However, she did not misplace the peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
That's
really counts. You know, that's cool. Okay. So, all right. Now we're going to... How Bush League are we? We're going to... Oh, is this what you did?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... He's got 8 books under his belt. And also, there is something there's a French film that was based on one of his books. And the French film is called Nos Amis les Flics. And it was based on the book that's called Cheap Shot.
We'll have to ask him all about that.
Yeah, I want to know. And this is the second time a book of his has been turned to a French film, because there's a French version of Quick Change that came out before the American version.
Maybe he's got a French friend.
I don't... Maybe he's like Jerry Lewis. You know, the French just dig him. You know what I mean?
Like how Hasselhoff is with the Germans?
Okay. That's one way of looking at it. Okay, that's not too bad. And you know what? Let's throw up a couple of links into the chat room for people. Here is, if you go, and of course, we are sitting in the Italian chat room, by the way, so if you want to find out and you want to interact with all of us, we're sitting in the chat room. That's called Italian here on Streamer.
Like me.
Like Jessica. Yeah, so that would be where you'd go and you'd find the horse racing. And then look on off to the right-hand side through the columns, and then you'll find where Jay is over there. Okay?
Funny, funny writer.
Yep. Okay. So, let's see. Now, I have read, of the 8 books he's written, I've read 4 of them. And I think you have too, right? You haven't read Good Vibes.
No, I did not read Good Vibes. I don't think I read any of them. I think I read, like, No.
You read Quick Change, didn't you?
No, I didn't read Quick Change. I read Funny Farm.
But, okay, you read Funny Farm. You didn't read Shoot?
Did not read Shoot.
With the married couple?
Nope.
And the hitmen?
Nope.
Really?
Didn't finish it, no.
No kidding, okay.
I think I started to.
Was that one of those books that we lost?
I think so.
Okay.
That's on the list.
Well, you know, we were reading a Raymond Chandler book, and hell if I know what happened to it. We got about 70 pages into that thing, and I don't know where it went.
That was The Lady in the Lake.
That was yes, it was The Lady in the Lake, and what a bunch of idiots we are that we lost the damn thing. Because it cost me like $10 for the damn thing.
For the damn thing.
For the damn thing, damn it. Okay. Now, I should, before we go ahead and start this and call him up, I should tell everyone about the best Christmas present that I ever had in my entire life. You want to know what it is?
I already know what it is.
You already know?
You know what? I don't think it was a Christmas... Was it a Christmas present?
Yes, it was a Christmas present.
Are you positive?
I am absolutely 100% positive.
Because I remember wrapping it in heart paper. I thought maybe it was a...
I'm pretty sure it was...
It was
no,
Valentine's Day.
I'm pretty sure it's Christmas.
Okay.
Well, how about this? When I tell the story, it's going to be Christmas.
Okay.
It's a much better Christmas story than it is Valentine's Day.
Okay.
Because Valentine's Day, you know, you don't have to get anything.
I mean, no, and we generally don't.
I know, the candy and the flowers and all that.
Well, we did that, nonsense. But we don't do like...
Like a gift.
Gift.
Oh, yeah, here you go. So, Jessica knows that my favorite movie happens to be Let It Ride. Now, for some reason, the book that it's based on, Good Vibes, is the hardest to find book in the known universe. There's no reason for this. It's just a regular paperback.
Just a paperback.
It's not printed on gold. And there's no secret map inside it, but you can't find this damn thing anywhere. And if you go ahead and look it up...
Can.
Yes. And how much does it cost if you go ahead and find it?
You know, I don't recall. I think it was above $100.
It was over $100 to buy this, and the last time I checked, ain't no paper bag worth $100.
No.
It better be like, you know, something Dickens wrote in, you know, first edition, maybe.
So what I do is I do a little research.
Jessica does a little research, gets in touch with the author himself.
I find out that he's writing for a newspaper.
Tulsa World.
Tulsa World. I shoot him an email, and I'm like, hey, just wondering if you're the same guy who wrote this book, and, you know, I'm trying to find it, but I can't find it, and I really want it for my boyfriend, because he just loves the movie, and yada yada, and sure enough, he writes me back, and he's like, hey, yeah, he's like, unfortunately, I don't have any more copies, but I would love to give one to you if I did, and I apologize, so good luck in your findings. And I was like, well, thanks a lot, you know? Thanks for, you know, even just thinking about the fact that you were going to send it. You know, he did not even have to respond to me. So, like, a week goes by, and he writes me a letter, and he says, hey, you know what? I was doing a little spring cleaning in my attic, and I found a box of books, and I have a couple of good vibes. Do you want me to send you one? And I said, let me think about that. Yes. So he sends it to me.
Yes!
It's got an inscription.
Yes.
Which I don't recall, but it says something like, Dear Dan, the secret to happiness lies somewhere in this book.
Yes, that is exactly what he wrote.
Jay Conley.
Yes. That is exactly how he autographed that book to me.
So let me ask you something. When you saw that book, like, what, do you remember your reaction?
Well, I remember because you sent it in the mail, and you sent it not from, like, where you worked. You sent it from the High Life Cafe, and that was the return address on there. Do you remember that?
No.
Okay, you went to, like, a cafe that's across the street from where you work, and you sent it from there. So I had no idea what this was. It was like, the High Life Cafe, what in the hell is this? And I remember opening it up, and there it was. Here was this book that I'd been looking for at least 10 years. And I was just floored. Just the fact that I had it. And then, that it was autographed, it was just like, no way. This, how did this happen? I mean, honestly, I've never gotten a gift like that, but so unexpectedly. And, you know, you sent it to my job as well. I don't know if you remember that. But
I went
to my job, and I was opening it with Antoine. Remember Antoine?
Yes.
And it's funny, because it's the kind of thing where I can't really express to other people just how cool of a gift that was. Because it's like, oh, yes, this is, like, my favorite thing, and it's autographed. And, you know, no one else, what's good vibes? Who's Jay Cronley? What are you talking about? You know what I mean? It's not like everybody went and saw Let It Ride. It was not a big hit. And you know what's so funny is that I saw Let It Ride in the theaters when I was 13 or 14 years old, and the only reason I saw that film was because my brother Eric talked me out of going to see Casualties of War, which came out that same weekend.
Uh-huh.
The absolutely no-fun Vietnam film with Michael J. Fox and Sean Penn that we were both really looking forward to, and then Eric decided that it was too adult for me. Of course, I was naturally extremely angry with him. Who are you to decide that for me? So instead we went and we saw Let It Ride, and I was like, yeah, all right, we'll see Let It Ride. And that is my favorite movie.
Yeah.
By the way, Eric's favorite movie, too.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, that is correct. Hang on, wait, don't... Are you going to get him on the air?
Yeah.
Just give me a few seconds here. You know, I wish I had thought of this, but you know what? I was busy with the other interview with the Life of Riley directors, which, by the way, went pretty darn good. Go ahead, get him on the air.
All right,
get
you
him
ready?
On. Yeah. Which, by the way, that interview went pretty darn good. Those guys were really good guys. You gonna say hi?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know he knows you. He doesn't really know me.
Hi. Hello.
Mr. Cronley.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good, sweetie. What's up?
Nothing. It's Jessica, and we are on the air.
Good. Hi, Jessica.
How you doing, Jay? It's Dan. How are you?
Dan, great. Thanks for calling. It's my pleasure to talk to you guys.
Oh, it is my pleasure to have you on the. You have no idea how excited I've been to be able to talk to you on the air. It's making my year, I got to tell you.
You know, Jessica and I, she called to make sure I was home, and we were talking a minute ago about about Let It Ride, the movie. And what's really more phenomenal about that movie and book than anything, you guys, is the fact that the book was called Good Vibes, the novel, and they changed the name to Let It Ride for the movie with Richard Dreyfuss and Terry Garr and Robbie Coltrane and the rest. And it was a fairly small printing, the original hardback, when it came out. And once that thing was made into a movie, the book has become so valuable, it is absolutely terrifying. Somebody, Dan, called me the other day from California, and they had found a hardback in good condition. I think the way they rate, you know, the condition of books, good, fair, great. So good was like one level from the best. A hardback copy of Good Vibes in good condition, $1,800.
Oh, my God.
As a, can you, I swear to God, I have, my ex-wife has two of them. Listen, I have one. And so, you know, when I, you need to put, if you find a hardback, man, get it.
That's awesome. Well, you know, before we got you on, Mr. Conley, we were telling the story about how I originally got in contact with you years and years ago.
Sure, I remember.
And I was telling them about how it was so awesome because originally you were like, you know what, darling, I'm sorry, but I don't have any more copies, but thanks for thinking of me.
And oh, and listen, it's on, if you plug up eBay or Alibri or what, some of those online bookstores, there was a picture, and the cover, Jessica, of the novel is like, excuse me, a cartoon cover.
Uh-huh.
It's like a guy grinning with a big horse's head next to him, right?
Yep, yep.
And so here is this cover of this comic novel, like on rare book pages with like Italian art artifacts from like the year 804.
So how does it feel?
And the copy of that book. I mean, no, it's ridiculous.
How does that feel to be the author of something that's so valuable?
It's. I have one copy. You know, when you do a book, they give you. Listen, when you do a book and it's published, they give you like 20 copies. And I'd go to a speaking thing, you know, and I'd hand those out like crackers. Like, really? I mean, I clearly remember giving a talk and like giving away hardback books like to winos. And so now, even the paperback is like $400.
Yeah, we know. But, you know, it was great because I think you were doing some spring cleaning or something, you said. And you said, hey, Jessica, you know what? I found some copies of the paperback. You want me to send you one?
And did I send one?
Oh, you sure did.
Yeah, of course I did. I remember that now. Okay. Can I have it back?
Oh, it was awesome. And you know what? You did an inscription. And to this day, if anybody ever asks Dan what his favorite gift was, that is it, hands down, no question.
It's the best gift that I've ever gotten in my entire life. In all 32
that's
years
so
of
so sweet. You know, that's, and you hear about people who write books and they're made into movies, you know, and they bitch and whine and complain. That, there's no complaints, man. They, whatever is wrong with that movie is wrong with the book, because the woman screenwriter did the book. I mean, it's almost like she got some scissors and cut out the pages, because it is almost word for word the book.
Well, you know what? That's a perfect lead-in for a question. How was it working with people taking something like something that you created and turning it into something that everybody was going to see and change it around and do this and do that? How was that process?
It was, Jessica, that's a good question. It's really odd and weird. And for about the last 5 or 6 years, I've been doing screenplays. I haven't written a book in a while. I've been working on screenplays, and I have a whole new respect for bad movies. Because I used to have no tolerance for bad. Listen, it is so hard. Screenplay, it's the hardest thing I've ever even thought about doing, so there's no such thing as a bad movie. But that's what caused it, Jessica. I mean, Let It Ride was perfect. I mean, it was word for word. But the other ones I've had done, Quick Change with Bill Murray was my book, and the first of that bank robbery book is terrific. And then they went, the last of it, you know, it's theirs, they bought it, and so they do whatever they want. And so they, you know, made stuff up. And Funny Farm with Chevy Chase was mine, and they changed that. And so, you know, when you're fairly close to it, you see why books, and not necessarily good books, but books, Jessica and Dan, don't make good movies. And here's why. You know, when you make a movie, they pay these people a fortune, and they're not going to take the camera off of them, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so what the charm you have in a book, like what you can write, you can take 40 pages to write about going to the grocery. Everything in a screenplay has to mean something, and also the camera is on the star. And so that's, I promise you, that's why, you know, like in Quick Change when they hired Gina Davis.
Yeah.
That character in the book was just kind of like there. But when they pay her X million, let me tell you what, the camera is on her, and they'll think of something for her to say. And so that's why books go berserk, and that's why they go crazy.
Wow.
So what's it like sitting there and seeing that they've changed things?
Well, it's, you know, I hate to bitch and gripe, because, Dan, it's like selling a car. I mean, that's the way you have, it's like selling anything. If I don't want to sell it, be quiet and don't sell it. And once I sell it, I have no right to gripe, but it's not frustrating, it's just weird. Because the things they do, I mean, sometimes you think you could do it better, and so that's what I've been trying to do here. Excuse me, the last 3 or 4 years writing original screenplays. Oh my God, this takes forever.
Wow. So you
sit down and write a book, you know, and you can write 10 pages. I mean, like today, I had the best day I've had in like years, and I wrote like a page. So it just, yeah, Danny, it's frustrating, and so you try to, you know. There comes a time in your life where you want them to do stuff the way you write it, you know?
Yeah.
And so the only way to guarantee, see, like in Quick Change, they robbed that bank the way I wrote it. But then they did whatever they wanted, so.
Well.
It's just odd. I'm not complaining. It's just odd.
Well, you know what? Here on the Radio Dan Show, you can go ahead and bitch at whatever you want.
That's right.
Well, I mean, it is frustrating, and so. You know, again, I just set out to write. I've done 3 original screenplays, and they're getting close to casting one, I think. But I mean, it takes you guys. I mean, with your show and the way you follow stuff, I was watching TV the other night, and it wasn't Jessica, it wasn't George Clooney, but it was somebody like that. It was somebody good, you know,
uh-huh.
Somebody really good. And
right.
he said, I have some time in like the winter. Of 2009. No, I swear to God, and he was serious. And so that's the way, you know, you do it, and you just put it in a box and mail it, and some decade they'll do it.
So, you know what, let me ask you, how did you get into writing books?
Well, it seemed like a natural progression. My father was a sports editor of the newspaper in Oklahoma City. And I worked for a newspaper, did magazine articles, and watch a lot of movies. And, you know, you think at some point I can do that. And the whole, listen, it's my belief, you guys, that we're in the throes of a global creative crisis. TV, movies, excuse me, art, ballet, anything you can think of, music. I don't think it's as, I mean, good now as it has been. And, I don't know what's going to be around in 5 years or 4 years or 10 years or 20 years. And it's ideas, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's all about ideas. And that's how, I'm a pretty good idea person, and that's how I got into writing books. And I spend as much time thinking about ideas as I do writing anymore.
So did you find that writing just kind of came natural? Did you go to school for it?
No, I went to University of Oklahoma, and I was an English major. And the good thing about being an English major is they make you read literature. You read books. You know, if you go to journalism school, you read, like, stuff. Like, textbooks.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
In English, you read, and that's the only way to learn how to write. I mean, the only way to learn how to write is to read. There's no other way. I mean, the thought that you could go to, I don't care, the fanciest Northwestern or greatest journalism or lit school in the world, and somebody can teach you how, you know, nobody can teach you how to think.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is what makes it. It's what, everything is about the idea. And so that's what I do. You know, I spend a lot of time. No, whatever we like, you guys, the reason why we, you know, the definition of originality is there something new in there and creative? And if it's a TV commercial or whatever we like, there's some, a new angle to it. So,
well, you know, I find myself, just my own personal,
uh-huh,
even when I'm watching like a television commercial, if it's interesting, you're here to proclaim the fact that I'll be like, oh my gosh, that is such a great commercial.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Jessica, the reason we like it is there's something original in it, and it doesn't have to be, if you're talking about a movie or a book or a newspaper article or a magazine, it doesn't have to be a trick ending. It doesn't. That's just an original element to it, original setting, original dialogue. I was sitting right before you guys called, and oh my God, talking about commercials, there was the best. Every time I see it, it's some Liberty Mutual or some insurance company, and the guy is at the security pad in his house, the home security thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
He goes, and he goes to his wife. He punches in a thing, and it's not right, and he goes, he yells to his wife, what's the code? And she said, we had it changed. And he said, what is it? And she said, our anniversary. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Listen, and the guy stands there at the pad, listen, frowning for like 15 seconds. And and he plugs in what he thinks is his anniversary, and the siren goes off. It isn't that. And so, I mean, stuff like that, and you could, you know, project that into books and movies and whatever. But, I mean, really, the idea is now, I don't know how much you guys watch TV. I mean, it's just absolutely god-awful, horrific, bad. Listen, it's bad beyond belief, this stuff that's on. But you know what? That's good for people in the business, because if you've got an idea, man, they'll pay you.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, if you and Dan, listen, if you come up with a good idea, they'll pay you. And you don't even have to write it. I was, you know, you'll sit and watch a TV show, and there'll be a credit, Jessica, at the end of it. It'll say, based on an idea by so-and-so.
Oh, gosh,
I've seen those credits. Yes, I certainly have, yes.
Yeah, Dan, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, it's like a form letter. You know, the name of a TV show, a list of your characters, a summary of, like, two or three shows, and then if it's any good, and if it's original, somebody will pay you. And it's the same with movies. Movies are sorry. I mean, it's bad out there. And the reason why is, I don't know. What do you guys think? Why? Listen, what's changed from when movies were, like, terrifying? I don't know.
Well, you know, honestly, like, from my point of view, I think it's because everybody in Hollywood has their nephews and their nieces, and they're all writing these crappy screenplays, and they're like, Uncle so-and-so, can you pay me $25,000 and just do this for me? Like,
oh, that's part of it. You couldn't be more correct.
And then you get a movie like Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah, I went last week and saw Running with Scissors. Have you guys seen that yet?
Yes, we did see that.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, all right, I guess, but I mean, again, it's just the idea. And if you've got a good idea, they'll pay. And all they do now is make what made money before. You know, that's all they do.
Yes, absolutely.
And so the whole key is just focusing on an idea and spending a lot of time getting your idea right. And that's, you know, that's where the business is now.
Yeah, you know, it really does seem like there's an absolute lack of ideas, especially over the last few years. Everyone just seems to go back to the well.
And that's it, exactly. And it's horrific. Listen, the only thing I can think of is computers and iPods and cell phones and BlackBerries. And nobody sits and thinks.
You're right.
I'm serious. Listen, nobody sits and thinks. And that's the way, listen, on Quick Change, I thought of a way to rob a bank. I thought of it. And I bet both of you guys, I sat 8 to 5 a year with a pad, and my whole goal, it's like inventing, you know, like a mad scientist. You think there's a bank and they've been robbed since the beginning of cave people a million times. What one way has it not been done? And by God, after a year, I thought of it.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought of it. I robbed it. I robbed that bank. I did it. And, you know, Spike Lee stole up my idea. Have you seen...
Oh, yeah.
Inside Man, yeah.
That's mine. And so, listen, I was sitting at the newspaper writing a column, and the phone rang, and some friend of mine said, quick, put on NPR. And I put on NPR, and the guy was interviewing Spike Lee, and he said, listen, that's quick change. You stole that idea, did you? I mean, that, and he goes, yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's how, if that's how hard ideas are to find.
Now, speaking of quick change, Jay, let me ask you, I see that there is a new edition of it that was printed this year.
Yeah, OU Press, here in University of Oklahoma Press, did a softback of it. See, now that'll knock down the hardback antique value, I guess.
So I was just wondering, is that just going to be for that book, or will all of your other books...
Well, there's going to be... Yeah, they reprint them, all of them from time to time, so... I wrote some new stuff. We got sued on... I got sued on that book for like $35 million.
Jeez!
On Quick Change.
Yeah, before they did Quick Change. I didn't, but my agent did, and there was it went to court in L.A., and I wrote... I mean, about the movie rights to it, and so... Excuse me, I did some new stuff on that, so... Yeah, it's fun. But, I mean, again, you know, it's an Ovation in an A-frame in Colorado. It's 8-to-5 work. That won't work, that won't work, and after you go through 50 ideas, and one does.
Wow.
And that's how important ideas are. So, there you have it. That's what I'm doing with these screenplays. I did a murder mystery, same way, sat for a year. Everybody's been killed in every way on the face of the Lord's earth, right?
Right.
Everybody's done it every way. There has to be one way left, and so I found it.
Wow.
And Jay has found the last way to kill someone.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Oh, my God.
There's more, but it's work, you know, and everybody's on their computer, and nobody sits around and screw. You know, the way you get good is you screw up, and, no, you know, everybody's in such a damn hurry now. It's.
You're right. You know, It's very funny, you know. Everything is so instant.
So, getting back to your question, Jessica, in learning the way I got to writing is my father was a writer, and by just being in that household, I read a lot.
So, what are some of your favorite books then?
Well, I read every word Donald Westlake has written. Donald E. Westlake, Westlake. He's living in upstate New York. And he is absolutely hilarious and probably as good as anybody. He's been writing, he's probably 70 or so, or in his 70s. He's absolutely great. He wrote, he does books and movies. He's really funny. He wrote Bank Shot and a whole bunch of caper things. And he also did the single scariest movie ever done in the history. And I'm not big on horror. I was in the theater, you guys.
Uh-huh.
And I was watching this movie in a theater. And I screamed and ducked behind the seat. Stepfather, have you seen it?
Yes, I've seen The Stepfather. Yes, I
and,
have.
And, oh my God.
Terry O'Quinn, yes.
Yes, Terry O'Quinn, who's in Lost.
Yes.
And whistling. Remember he whistled Camptown, whatever, when he was getting ready to, like,
yes.
Slice somebody's guts out? And that little kid got onto him. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
And that the guy who wrote that, Donald Westlake, is the sweetest, funniest, kindest man in the world. And the other ones, I think there have been like 8 of them, haven't there?
Yeah, there's more than one Stepfather running around out there. Absolutely.
The first one, the one with Terry O'Quinn,
that's
is
the
an
one.
Absolute masterpiece. So Jessica, I read him, and I also, my opinion, the greatest living writer in the world died last year, Evan Hunter. He wrote, his first book was Blackboard Jungle, and he wrote probably 80 books.
Oh my goodness, Blackboard Jungle is probably in my top 10 favorite movies.
Absolutely. You know, that was the first movie where rock and roll was used for the soundtrack. The first movie was rock and roll as the soundtrack.
If I recall correctly, I did know that.
Bill Haley, Rock Around the Clock.
That's
Bill Haley and the Comets. When Glenn Ford walks into that school in New York City, Bill Haley and the Comets are playing Rock Around the Clock, and that's the first rock and roll record. It must have been in, oh my Lord, 50s. Anyway, Evan Hunter, and he wrote Mysteries under Ed McBain.
Oh, okay, yes. I've actually read a few of Ed McBain books.
They're great.
Yes, they are. They're great books.
So, I mean, if you want to learn how to write, just read everything those two guys have written, and that's that. And then, listen, they've written so many books, you can read them all, and by the time you get back to starting again, I mean, you've forgotten them, so.
Okay.
That is awesome.
I have a question for you, Jay. I know you're a big horse racing guy.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, you know, Good Vibes is not only it's about horse racing, but the main character shares the same name that you have.
Is that hilarious? Yeah, Jay, that's the guy responsible for getting that movie made was named Ned Dowd, D-O-W-D, and his sister wrote the screenplay. And Ned Dowd, she also wrote Slapshot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Ned was in it. Ned played that horrible guy who I can't remember the character's name, but was all the time knocking people out with his stick. Anyway, Ned was a friend of mine, and I met him because he likes horses, too. And so, yeah, he just named that guy. Yeah, he named Richard Dreyfuss Jay in that.
Wait.
You know, those horse racing scenes in that movie are the best in the history of horse racing. What they did was, those are real, right? They staged those races.
Mm-hmm.
They bought the horses at Hialeah back before Hialeah went under in Miami. And they bought the horses from, like, 20 of them for insurance reasons, and they raced them. They made up those races, and then they sold them back to the owners. But they were fantastic races.
So were you around, were you on set or anything for the making of...
One day.
Just one day?
I went down one day, and it was the guy... This shows the prestige that goes with being a book writer, right?
All right.
They had the first meeting at the Doral Country Club in Miami, right?
Uh-huh.
Big pre-production. The fun thing, you guys, was the night before, Richard Dreyfuss and Buster Poindexter, who played Looney, and the whole cast, we all went to a dog track in Miami to get in the right frame of mind, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Is that a great way to start a movie?
Absolutely.
Go drink beer and bet on dogs.
There you go.
And so listen, we walk in that place, and the dog tracks in Miami are privately owned, probably still are, and some little old lady owned this place. And obviously having Richard Dreyfuss in the place, in the building, was a big thrill. And so we were sitting there, and she would come over before every race and whisper to him. And he would get up and bet. And he won, and she was obviously telling him who to bet, which doesn't speak very well for that sport. The only thing I didn't like about him was he didn't tell anybody.
What a bastard.
Did not.
That's what I thought. And he hit it like he needed, you know, a couple of $100. And he won money and we didn't. Oh, anyway, I was down there that night, and then the director was the guy who set Michael Jackson's hair on fire. In that commercial.
No kidding. Joe Pitka.
Yes, Pitka. And he walked in, and he looked like Conan the director. He was like 6'9", weighed like 400 pounds, and his wife looked like she just came out of a cake at a coach's convention. And the craziest people, he came in, and he had a real thick European accent. And we were sitting there the day before they were going to shoot, and he said, "I don't want dialogue getting in the way of my movie." And I thought, taxi! I came home.
The book writer is going home now.
Yes, and so that was it, Jessica. One night at the dog track.
That's funny.
And see, as a book writer, you get, nothing.
Yeah.
Listen, true story. Last year I got a postcard in the mail, about a year ago this summer, a postcard from France. And it said, "We made your movie, period," and there was a signed name to it.
Okay.
That's
well, how's that for royal treatment?
Okay, so, wait. Let me get this straight. So you didn't know that they were adapting one of your books?
Yes, the book had been under option, Dan. I promise you. 7 years, 8 years, every year, renewed. Every year, not a word. The name of the book was Cheap Shot. Every year, renewed. Postcard, we made your movie.
Wow.
Pretty exciting, huh?
That's very exciting.
And I wrote the guy back and I said, thanks. can I see it? And so they sent me a tape, and it's got a great cast. It's a French movie, and the name of the book was Cheap Shot, and there's no literal translation. So they called it Our Friends, the Cops. Les Amis, something or other. And it's supposed to be okay, so if you ever see it.
Well, I mean, isn't there a couple of French movies from your books, or?
Yeah, they did that one, and then they did the one, they did Quick Change.
So what's up with the French? They just dig you like Germany digs house off.
Yeah, they just, I don't know. They just do a lot of comedies over there.
You're like Jerry Lewis over there? Is that what it is?
Oh, okay, Dan. Okay, Dan, send my book back. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's it. I mean, that's it. Jerry Lewis and I, that's it. Oh, I guess they just are out of material. I don't know what it is. That shows where you are as a book writer. Nowhere.
Yeah.
No, you know, they were all nice. Everybody's been nice. I got to see him. I got to see Bill Murray. He was extremely pleasant, and I got to go to New Jersey where they made Quick Change, and I...
How was that? Did he hide the hot tips like...
No, he's absolutely exactly the same way. He's exactly the same person he is in the movies.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Huh.
Just as friendly and pleasant and kind of ornery. Just a real nice guy. You know, he's gotten serious. What the hell is that about?
Right? Yeah. What has he been doing? He did
Broken Flowers.
Oh my God, Dan! What was that?
How boring was that movie?
What in the why do these people who are comic, they're geniuses?
Yes.
Think that they're not content with being the funniest people on God's earth and do something like that. Wasn't that unbelievable? I was hoping somebody would, like, kill him or something. Just stop that movie.
He just mopes around for, like, 2 hours.
And he moped around 2 hours, the end.
Yeah.
Yes, that's it.
I mope around here, I go to other states, I mope around there, and then...
And it started with that, you know, he's done, like, 3 or 4 of those in a row.
Well,
he used to cut that out.
The Lost in Translation he did.
Yeah, and that was kind of mopey. And he did that submarine one was kind of mopey.
Oh,
that's right. The Let's
It started with that school movie that was kind of serious, which wasn't bad.
The school movie.
Yeah, that. The name of the school was the movie.
Oh, Rushmore.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was serious. So, anyway, the whole thing is, it's the whole business is crazy, but the common link, you guys, to everything is the idea. So.
That's awesome.
So, Jay, well, let me ask you a little bit about you and your horse racing prognosticating experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, tell me, what is, like, the best day that you've had at the track?
I do a weekly piece on ESPN.com, and then you plug up horse racing. In about a month, so that's a good question. Somebody, they hooked an email up to that ESPN column I do. And you, Dan, you cannot believe, you know, if you like, you guys like horses, I hear horse stories that they're so funny, you can't even read them. I mean, everybody who has ever been to the racetrack has almost won like $1 million, right? And these stories, I mean, from New York and Florida, everywhere in England, it's just a riot. Anyway, that's the most asked question. So about a month ago, I did a piece, and I think I won... I love little teensy tiny racetracks. You guys probably don't have as many of those little bitty ones in Florida as we do here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're just little wide spots in the road.
No, we only have huge ones.
Yes, yeah, Gulfstream and...
Yeah, and all that stuff. There's one here called Will Rogers Downs. I swear to God, I could not make that up. I mean, Will Rogers never met a horse he didn't like.
I was just about to say that.
So, it's by Claremore, where he was born. Nice racetrack, but it was raining there one day, and a friend and I bet on a horse from New Mexico that went off at about 50 to 1, and we won every penny in the whole entire racetrack. No, everything. The people, they had to go, like, from window to window, like, shaking change out of the teller's pocket. We just won everything. It was in the rain, and so that was probably it.
All right, now, just to flip that, what is the worst time that you've ever had?
The worst time at a racetrack?
Yes.
Well, most any Breeders' Cup day. That stuff is so hard. I went to the first one in Los Angeles 22 years ago. You know, that's the day when they do all the championship races.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my agent, and we Didn't cash a ticket. Lost. You know, I was being a big shot. And you guys sit down here, and let me show you how to do it. And we got obliterated.
Oh, no.
Wiped off the earth. We lost everything we had and could borrow. Had no money for food, and it was like we had to, like, hitchhike home.
you and your agent had to hitchhike home.
Yeah.
Listen, one time, Dan, his brother, and I actually took the rent down to the Dania High Line.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. We were a little short on the rent, weren't we?
We were like
$100.
$100 short.
Yes.
And we said, screw it. Let's see if we could go do something with it.
Let's go make
the High Line.
High Line, yeah.
Yes.
Listen, I've got a Hi-Li system. You want to hear it?
Yes, please.
Are you ready?
Yes.
I swear to God.
I'm getting a pen. Go ahead.
Send me 10%, okay?
Okay.
Doubles, right?
Yes.
The fattest guys always win. 90% of the time, the fattest team wins.
You're kidding.
No. So you got to get their weight. Don't ask me why. Fat guys kick butt at Hi-Li.
That's awesome. Yeah, I wish we would have known that when we had the rent going. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Jay.
Are those things still going good?
You know what? They're getting, like, slot machines down here, so they're going to be putting them in.
Honey, here, too. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Indian casinos here are absolutely, it's beyond, it's Pottersville. It's beyond anything. Day and night, 24 hours a day, I mean, it's almost tragic, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Indian casinos are really killing off a lot of the parimutuels. And, you know, their slot machines are only coming to Broward County. So, you know, Dania Hi-Li and Gulfstream and the Hollywood Dog Track are going to be getting regular slot machines. But everyone else is still going to be languishing.
Oh, Dan, you got to have them. You know, you can. They make more off slot machines than anything. You go to races anymore, and there are a few hundred people, but the purses are for $50,000. Nobody there, but the money they're racing for is just gargantuan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's pitiful. It really is. I mean, the gambling, I mean, they cash like welfare checks. I mean, we have like over 100 Indian casinos here in Oklahoma. Can you believe that?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
They're everywhere.
We've got like five.
Yeah,
I think that's too many.
Yeah, there's like five here in the state.
Oh, there are 100. You could go in at 4 in the morning in the middle of nowhere. It's full. Blackjack, slot machines.
Wow.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Wow. So he has, see, over here in Florida, it's so much more restrictive because the Indian casinos here can only have bingo-style slot machines and low-stakes poker. So that higher level of gambling, you know, like blackjack and roulette and craps, it's not allowed anywhere in the state here.
Well, you guys come here with all the religious psychos and just gamble your guts out. So they're everywhere.
So let me ask you, Jay, when you go to the track, how do you know which horses to bet on? Are you just picking, or do you kind of can figure things out by taking a look?
Do you know the handicaps?
Dan, you know what? We've got, here in Tulsa, where I live, we've got the best simulcast joint I've ever seen. And, you know, on the Dish, TVG, and all these play, what I do is I really focus on one track. And it's kind of self-defeating. To do it well, you have to really pay attention and spend the time, you know? You have to sit there, and you have to watch races, and you have to watch and read and pay attention, and it's almost like a part-time job. But if you do it, if you really take it seriously, and you know what you're doing, you can make money. And I focus on one track at a time. And I can make some money. But, I mean, again, it just takes, and it almost gets to the point where it's not enough fun, you know?
Gotcha. Well, you know, they say that about any passion. You know, if you turn it into a job, then it eventually, you know, it's all work anyway, you know?
Yeah, and it is. It really is. And you've got to pay attention, and you can't miss anything, and you've got to really focus. And a friend and I have been watching the races here recently at Mountaineer. And it's, you know, it's all in West Virginia. And there, it's just like what we said, you know, they built it. It's a rat hole. I mean, it used to be the worst, and they built a casino there now, and it's paradise all of a sudden, wherever that place is, up in the corner.
Wow.
And so they have real cheap grass races there. You know, usually turf races are high dollar. like at your guys, at you guys track in Florida, and they're high dollar races. Mm-hmm. But at Mountaineer, they have cheap races, cheap claiming races. And if you pay attention, there was one period of time there where all the quick horses, the horses that got out of the gate quick, won every race. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you don't have to be too smart. You just have to be there.
Gotcha.
And you have to watch what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And so you have, you know, you have no social life. And, you know, I walked in one night, Jessica, and to the simulcast place. And the lady said, where's first aid? And I said, what? And she said, don't you work here? I said, no, lady, God bless, I got to go home. Oh, I was there so much, she thought I worked there.
So then, do you focus more on, like, writing about it than actually being, like, a gambler?
No, both.
Oh, so you're...
Yeah, write about it. No, I go. Man, we go. Yeah. I went yesterday. Spent all day over there yesterday. Because, I mean, that's the fun thing about everything is so sterile and... The characters, man, horses are the only thing left. It's like, no, really, listen, guys and dolls, and I mean, that's where they are. And it's the people are so much fun.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you sit at home and get the satellite and do what, it's just not the same.
Well, I tell you, we've been to the Hi-Li a few times, mm-hmm. and I know it's not horse racetrack, but it's still, like, the people there.
It's the funnest thing in the world.
It really is.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, it's the people in the cafeteria watching on the televisions. It's the people yelling to the highlight players, "You bum!"
Oh yeah, Jessica. Listen, I'll send you guys. I'll send you this link. Somebody sent me at the newspaper a story about it's a club sort. They collect. This guy collects racetracks. And some guy, you know, some people do it. This one person I knew gave tours of minor league baseball parks. Isn't that fun? I mean, Deep South, Double A, Savannah, all over the place.
Wow.
And this person was putting out information, T-shirts and stuff about all the teeny tiny racetracks in the country.
Ah.
Oh, I'll send you the link. It was just, I mean, it's so much, and I kind of collect them too. You know, when I go somewhere, man, I like to find the racetrack, and the smaller the better. So I'll send that to you.
Yes,
yeah, you can't
do.
Find people like that anywhere else in the world, man. They're still there.
So let me ask you this, Jay. The Kentucky Derby, how come the race is like 2.5 minutes, but when I watch it on TV, it takes like 2 hours to get to it?
Yeah, that's, you know what, that's, we were talking about that last week. Horse race coverage is kind of like a stencil, you know, it's all the same. And I don't know what anybody could do. It's a little uppity, and it's, you know, rich people and sheiks and all that stuff. And the Derby, yeah, it's just, all, you know, soap opera actors talking about their betting their phone numbers or whatever. But it's, they need to improve probably the coverage a little bit. It's,
and
you know, Dan, listen, again, that's what the sports, that's what I love about it, actually, is the fact that it's, you have some time to think. But the competition is what you said, you know, slots and dice and...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
this isn't a society to sit and think anymore.
You're right.
Now, for the last 3 years, anytime the Triple Crown Racing comes up, what I do is I go to ESPN.com and I look for Jay Cronley's column. Mm-hmm. And I bet on whatever it is you'd say to bet on.
Yeah, and sometimes it'd be, Jessica, while you're out... Stop by the Greyhound track.
Stop by the ATM machine.
Yes, exactly. Go ahead and play.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Thanks a lot for that, Jay.
Yeah,
that is. I know I've corrupted Dan. He was at the library before he and I met, right?
So far,
I'm just pissy because he hasn't won anything.
Yes, I've yet to win a cent.
Well,
I lose every year.
No, listen, we will fix that.
Okay. All right.
What's going on in your state? What track's going now?
Is the Gulfstream going right now?
Is it going on now?
They revamped it. You should come visit.
I heard that's the prettiest place. A lady I know who...
Oh, my God.
Holy.
National Airlines. You would not recognize it.
How far is it from you?
It's about
20-30 minutes
from me.
Yeah, in the winter they all come down there from New York. I haven't been there. I've been to Miami, to Hialeah, in but I need to come there to that new place.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculously fancy.
I'll try to and guarantee you winter if we have to bet every horse in the race.
Okay.
Fantastic.
That sounds like a good plan.
See, time to bet the rent again. That's what I say.
That's nice to encourage everybody yes to take all their money and gamble, huh?
Absolutely. You know, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Reading Good Vibes, it's such a kind of a pro-gambling book. Have you ever had any encounters with people with sort of the opposite view? How can you take this former gambling addict? I mean, in the book, he actually goes to, he goes to a support group for gambling.
And that's the only thing, you know, that's a fabulous question, Dan. That's the only thing they took out, the reference, they were going to start that movie with a Gamblers Anonymous meeting being robbed. Is that funny or what?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know,
and somebody got scared of it because it was a little, you know, in this day and age of all the rehab and crap, they were worried. But anyway, that's a good question, and the answer is you can make points with humor and that you can't if you were to do a straight movie about gambling, right? You'd wind up with some of the movies that have been done, you know, people in the bathtub bleeding. And so you can make the point, you can do anything with humor, and if it's funny, you can get away with it. And whereas otherwise it's preaching. But that's a good question. Yeah, I don't mean to laugh at people going under, but I don't think I contribute to it, so.
There you go.
Hell with them. I mean, you know, after Quick Change came out, the bank robbery book, listen, somebody dressed up as a clown, right, and robbed a bank in New Jersey, and I thought, okay, perfect, I'm going to jail. I swear to God, dressed up as a clown and robbed a bank.
Did he get away with it?
No, they caught him.
Yeah.
Thank the Lord God. But, I mean, I think there was some court case, you know, where it actually went to trial where somebody said, I think they watched Natural Born Killer. Seriously.
Oh.
Yeah, and said that movie made me kill people. And you know, you can't hold any art responsible for a nut. So, but anyway... No, I gambling is a serious thing, and particularly around here with these 100 Indian casinos.
Good Lord.
100.
See, that's how the Indians are getting back at us. That's what I've been saying.
Well,
yeah. They're making so much money, yes. They can't count it.
Yes.
Last week, at the Cherokee Casino here, it's exactly like a Las Vegas casino, maybe bigger, they gave away a house.
Oh, my God.
They give away Corvettes. They're making so much. And listen, nobody knows what the house cut is. They go in there and play these slots. They have no clue what they're doing. In my, you know, the money room, I bet they have, like, big, huge, like, metal rakes. And they're raking, like, $100 bills. Right now, they're in there raking it.
Go teach them how to do it, Jay.
You guys have to come here to God's country and, have a look at this gambling.
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Listen, I really will try in the winter when they come to Florida. I have a friend who flies for National, and she and her sister and uncle live at Gulfstream, so I'll try to get down there.
That would be awesome. Please contact me when you do,
because
we will stop by, and we'll be there the whole day with you. You'll have to beat us up with a stick.
I know. He'll get tired of us.
I'd like, be great. Right,
you guys got to go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leave me alone now. I've got to go to sleep. But that's great. Jay, you know what? Is there anything else that you want to talk about while you've got a small audience?
No, so yeah, it's nice to talk to somebody interested in, you know, what you do. And again, even though it's kind of distressing that the fact that the arts as a whole are kind of sorry, it's cyclical, it'll come back. And again, it's for anybody in the business, anybody who wants to write. I mean, this is the time to do it because it stinks. And if you have a good idea, they'll pay you. And so...
Well, I tell you what. We're waiting for your movie, okay?
Yeah, it's called Killer Marriage. And I absolutely 100% will keep you posted.
Fantastic.
Yes, please
Fantastic.
Do.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so... You guys are very sweet, and I appreciate the time. And, yeah, listen, I do the weekly thing on ESPN.com. It's free. And also, Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday, a column in the Tulsa World, and it's free, TulsaWorld.com.
Gotcha. I think that's how I originally got your email, too, like years ago.
Sure, that's free. So come and get it.
Come and get it, everybody out there.
Yep.
Jay, thank you so much for talking with us, and I hope to talk to you again.
Anytime, sweet Dan. It's listen, keep a good thought. We'll win money.
Okay. Fantastic.
Hey, listen. In fact, we'll win money before I come down there. I'm going to go get a racing form and stay up 4 days and four nights and pick you a winner.
Wow.
Yes, finally.
Man, thank God.
I'll talk to you guys.
All right. Thanks, Jack. Bye-bye. Well, I you know, we've gone over, but I don't really care.
This is awesome. This was probably the best.
Okay, did we kiss his ass enough? That's what I wanted.
You
think?
Know what, though? I can't help it. Like that,
I know.
It wasn't kissing ass. It was, I think you're awesome, and I'm just going to revel in you.
You know, and it's funny because I've read 30 books in my lifetime, right? Something like this. Four of them this guy wrote.
Yeah.
It's funny. Even though he had the Tulsa World, and I know that he's in Oklahoma, I didn't expect the Southern accent like that.
I
don't know why. I don't know why. But, yeah, that was just fantastic. Anyway, we are running a little over here. We are out of time. I want to thank Jay Cronley for coming on and being a fantastic guest tonight. What a fun hour this was. Good job, Jessica.
Oh, thank you.
And everybody stick around because the Michael Zavala show is coming up as soon as we're going off the air. And we will be back again tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Radio Dan show one more time. However, you're going to want to check in tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Tomorrow at 8 o'clock, Dick Gautier, Jaime from Get Smart, is going to be on the live test show. And you're not going to want to miss that. So,
wow.
And again, talkradiox.com. Go check it out. Go to the forums, sign up, be a member, be a friend, tell us you hate us, we don't care. Anyway, this is Radio Dan saying goodnight. Say goodnight, Jessica.
Good night, Jessica.
See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Brilliant!
Log on to Mystery Play Internet Radio for the live show, Mystery Play Live, every Saturday, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Central Time Zone.